Let's pick up our story today in 2 Samuel chapter number 18, starting at verse number 6. This is the situation. David has successfully evacuated his government from Jerusalem, across the Jordan Valley, then up to the city of Mahanaim, where he is finding supporters that will keep him safe and supplied until David can deal with the Absalom coup. Now, Absalom has followed the advice of Hushai, who is actually working for David, of delaying his pursuit of David until he can get together a sufficient military presence. So some time passes, maybe a few days, perhaps a few weeks, maybe a month or so. And Absalom and his people come up the Jordan Valley and across the Jordan into Gilead near Mahanaim. And David's people divided up into three large groups under the command of Joab, Abishai, and Ittai, go out of the city of Mahanaim to meet the Absalom threat. The last thing that David says to his commanders, in the presence of all the fighting warriors, is, "Be kind to Absalom," meaning, "Don't kill him. Bring him back alive." So that's widely understood as the standing order regarding Absalom. So this is all happening, I believe, in the 35th year of David's kingdom, which means David is about 65 years of age. Absalom's about 33, 34, something in that neighborhood. And David is staying in Mahanaim, awaiting word of Absalom's capture and that the coup is now over. And so this is what happened next. 2 Samuel 18:6. So the army went out into the field against Israel. Israel here represents the army of Absalom. And the battle was fought in the forest of Ephraim. Now, the forest of Ephraim is on the east side of the Jordan Valley. It is heavily forested. It's old growth. And it has a lot of big trees, gnarly branches. There's apparently a lot of uneven ground in here. Maybe some caves, maybe some sinkholes, things of that, where you can get yourself into a lot of trouble trying to go through this terrain at top speed. And so the men of Israel were defeated there by the servants of David, and the loss there was great on that day. So the fight is engaged, and 20,000 of Absalom's soldiers are killed in one day. That's a monstrous casualty group. Verse 8, the battle spread over the face of all the country, and the forest devoured more people that day than the sword. So even though we've got 20,000 guys that die from battle wounds, even more than that end up dying because they ran off a cliff, or maybe they got their head, taken off by a limb as they were trying to ride away. But something bigger happens in this deep, dark forest of Ephraim. Verse number 9. Absalom happened to meet the servants of David. And Absalom was riding on his mule, and the mule went under the thick branches of a great terebinth, and his head caught fast in the oak, and he was suspended between heaven and earth while the mule that was under him went on. So Absalom in the retreat is riding apparently at top speed on his mule. Maybe he's looking out behind him to see whether or not, you know, he's being pursued at that instance. And boom, his head runs into one of these low-hanging branches, and he gets jerked off of his mule, and he's suspended in the air. Now, it is assumed by most of us that it's because he has very woolly hair and beard that he could not get free from this situation. Now, you might ask, well, why didn't he cut his own hair and get untangled from this situation? Well, there could be a couple of explanations to this. He could have knocked himself unconscious or done some other damage to his head when he got pulled off the mule, and he might not even be, conscious enough to do anything for himself. The other thing is, he may have actually had his sword in his hand as a defensive weapon as he's riding along, and when this happened, he lost it. And see, he may not have anything sharp with which to cut himself free. But whatever the reason is, he is totally, incapable of getting himself out of this situation. He's just hanging there above the ground when David's men find him. Verse number 10. A certain man saw it and told Joab, "Behold, I saw Absalom hanging in an oak." So one guy sees Absalom, recognizes him, and reports it back to Joab. And Joab said to the man who told him, "What? You saw him? Why did you not strike him there to the ground? I would have given you 10 pieces of silver and a belt." But the man said to Joab, "Even if I felt in my hand the weight of 1,000 pieces of silver, I would not reach out my hand against the king's son. For in our hearing, the king commanded you and Abishai and Ittai, for my sake, protect the young man Absalom. On the other hand, if I dealt treacherously against his life and there was nothing hidden from the king, then you yourself would have stood aloof." So Absalom's hanging in the tree. One of David's men sees him there, reports it to Joab. Joab says, "What do you mean you just left him hanging there? Why didn't you kill him on the spot? I would have paid you for that." And the man's response is, "Are you kidding me? The king made it very clear that Absalom was to be kept alive. There is no way in the world you couldn't even pay me 1,000 pieces of silver to kill him while he's hanging from that tree. Because even if I did and you said you'd protect me, the king would have found out about it and then you wouldn't have protected me." And Joab said back to him in verse 14, "I will not waste time like this with you." And then he took 3 javelins in his hand and he thrust them into the heart of Absalom while he was still alive in the oak. And 10 young men, Joab's armor bearers, surrounded Absalom and struck him and killed him. So Absalom, against the specific orders of King David, kills Absalom. Joab kills Absalom as he's hanging helpless in the tree. And it wasn't just him. It was Joab's right-hand men, his top lieutenants, that killed him with multiple weapons. So he is full of holes from being stabbed to death. And then Joab blew the trumpet, and the troops came back from pursuing Israel, for Joab restrained them. Joab saw no reason to keep fighting once Absalom was dead, because that was the point of this fight. It was King David or King Absalom. Whichever king stays alive is the one that's going to reign. So Absalom is dead, David is alive. Joab doesn't see a reason for there to be a civil war. Verse 17, they took Absalom And they threw him into a great pit in the forest and raised over him a very great heap of stones. And then all Israel fled, every one to his own home. Now, Absalom in his lifetime had taken and set up for himself the pillar that is in the king's valley, for he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. And they called the pillar after his own name. It's called Absalom's Monument to this day. Now, this is kind of strange here. We know that Absalom did have some sons. But apparently, before he had those sons, when he was a much younger man, he decided that he was going to build himself a monument in the King's Valley, which seems to be the Kidron Valley, just to the immediate east of Jerusalem. So he built the Pillar of Absalom, and he ends up not even being buried at his own monument. His body is thrown out in this pit, and that's a shame. And so David now is going to hear. Verse number 19, then Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, said, let me run and carry news to the king that he who is has delivered him from the hand of his enemies. And Joab said to him, you're not to carry news today. You may carry news another day, but today you shall not carry news because the king's son is dead. So Ahimaaz, who is one of the high priest's sons, he's been acting as a courier already. He wants to come and bring the news to David that the coup is over. But Joab won't let him go. Now, why is that? I think it's possible that Joab is concerned that any messenger that brings the news that Absalom is dead, despite David saying he wanted him kept alive, that messenger might himself be executed. Because you know, two other occasions, David has executed men who brought him news of kings' deaths. So Joab said to the Cushite instead, go tell the king what you've seen. And the Cushite bowed before Joab and he ran. So a Cushite messenger is told to take the news to David. But as soon as this Cushite takes off, verse 22, Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, said again to Joab, come what may, let me also run after the Cushite. And Joab said, why will you run, my son, seeing that you have no reward for the news? Come what may, he said, I will run. So Joab said to him, run. And then Ahimaaz ran by the way of the plain and outran the Cushite. So Ahimaaz must be pretty fast on his feet. And he knows a shortcut. And he gets to David's encampment or to Mahanaim before the official messenger. Verse 24. Now David was sitting between the two gates, and the watchman went up to the roof of the gate by the wall. And when he lifted up his eyes and looked, he saw a man running alone. Now, the two gates that are mentioned here is the idea of a double-gate city, which means that there's extra room between these two sections that lead to the main part of the city. It's an added protection. If the first gate is broken through, then there's an area to fight in outside of the second gate to maybe delay or even repel the invaders. And a lot of times that area between the two gates becomes like a marketplace or something like that. So David is there in that section. He's waiting for news of the battle. So the watchman that's up on top of the first gate, he sees somebody running toward the city on his own. Verse 25, the watchman called out and told the king, and the king said, well, if he's alone, there's news in his mouth. And as he drew nearer and nearer, the watchman saw another man running, and the watchman called to the gate and said, see, another man is running alone. And the king said, he also brings news. So David is now aware there's two runners heading to Mahanaim with a report about the battle. Verse 27, the watchman said, I think the running of the first is like the running of Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok. And the king said, well, he's a good man, and he comes with good news. So there's something about the running style of Ahimaaz that this watchman recognizes. And David figures that Ahimaaz is going to be bringing good news. Then Ahimaaz cried out to the king, all is well. And he bowed and before the king with his face to the earth and said, blessed be he who is your God, who has delivered up the men who raised their hand against my lord the king. So Ahimaaz, who wanted to bring David good news, gives him the news that the battle went for David's side, that the other side is in full retreat. But then the king wants more detail. Verse 29, the king said, is it well with the young man Absalom? Now Ahimaaz answered, when Joab sent the king's servant, your servant, I saw great commotion, but I don't know what it was. So he evades the question. He deflects. Because possibly on his run, he got to thinking, well, the last two guys that brought news about the deaths of kings ended up dead. Maybe I'm not so certain I want to be a third messenger that brings the death of a king. And so he evades the question, doesn't give the information. And so the king said to him, turn aside, stand here. So he turned aside and stood still. Behold, the Cushite came, and the Cushite said, good news for my lord the king. For he who is has delivered you this day from the hand of all who rose up against you. So same message that Ahimaaz brought. The rebels have failed. The coup is over. The king said to the Cushite, is it well with the young man Absalom? So did they capture him like I gave instructions? And the Cushite answered, may the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise up against you for evil be like that young man. Now that's a bit of a twisted way to say he's dead. That basically he paid the penalty for his rebellion. And may anyone else who rebels against you, O King David, pay the same penalty. Now, this kills the king. The king was deeply moved, and he went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, he said, oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would I had died instead of you, O Absalom, my son. David is a broken man in this moment. Now, why is that? I think it is because he ultimately blames himself for the situations that led to this day. The fact that ultimately he was involved in an affair that went unpunished, at least not in the way that it should have been punished by the legal standards of Israel. And because of that, David may not have felt free to execute his son Amnon, who raped his half-sister Tamar, the full sister of Absalom. And that led to Absalom killing Amnon, and Absalom running away to his grandfather's palace up in the north, up in Syria. And then that made a breach between David and Absalom, which took years to be repaired. And even then, apparently, it wasn't properly prepared because Absalom was plotting this coup all along because he didn't want his father David on the throne anymore. He felt that his father wasn't right for the job. And that's what brought this time when it was either David or Absalom. One or the other had to die. And so here is David grieving over the fact that his son is dead and that he wishes on this day it had been the other way around. Now, you can kind of understand the emotion of the moment, but it causes a problem for those who defended David on this day. So chapter number 19 says, it was told Joab, behold, the king is weeping and mourning for Absalom. And so the victory that day was turned into mourning for all the people, for the people heard that day, the king is grieving for his son. And the people stole into the city that day as people steal in who are ashamed when they flee from battle. So instead of coming back victorious, excited, a victory parade, a victory return to the city of Mahanaim, the soldiers of David come back ashamed that they have brought their king to grief because Absalom is dead. And you have to picture this in your head. Every last one of these warriors are coming back through the main gate. And above that gate is where David is in a little private chamber crying. And every last one of these warriors coming back, blood covered, dirt all over themselves, they're coming back, and this is what they hear just above their heads as they come through the gate. The king covered his face, and the king cried with a loud voice, oh, my son Absalom! Oh, Absalom, my son, my son! And again, probably some of the things that he said earlier, oh, if only I died instead of you! And that's what they're hearing as they come in. And Joab can't stand it. So Joab came into the house to the king and he said, you have today covered with shame the faces of all your servants who have this day saved your life and the lives of your sons and your daughters and the lives of your wives and your concubines because you love those who hate you and hate those who love you. For you have made it clear today that commanders and servants are nothing to you. For today, I know that if Absalom were alive and all of us were dead today, then you'd be pleased. So Joab just rakes him over the coals. Remember, he is actually David's nephew, but he and David are very close in age. And he tells David, how dare you? How dare you shame the people who put their lives on the line today for you? Because you're standing here, you're sitting here weeping and crying as they come in from their victory on your behalf, and you're signaling to them that you wish you're dead. You would rather they would be dead today, that they were the ones that lost. How dare you shame your people like this? And then he gives this, verse 7, now therefore arise, you go out and you speak kindly to your servants, for I swear by he who is, that if you do not go, not a man will stay with you this night, and it'll be worse for you than all the evil that's come upon you from your youth until now. So Joab tells him, if you don't knock it off, if you don't quit crying over the guy that wanted you dead, if you don't go down there and greet your troops with thanks, if you don't tell them you appreciate them and what they did for you, you will be abandoned by them all. You won't be king. Because it will be worse for you than anything that's happened in your life to this point. And apparently David realizes that in this instance, Joab is 100% correct. No matter how much he is grieving in his heart over the loss of Absalom, these people put their lives on the line for him. And he needs to make it clear that he appreciates that. And so verse 8, then the king arose and he took his seat in the gate. And the people were all told, behold, the king is sitting in the gate. And all the people came before the king. So David reverses his actions and welcomes the warriors back from the fight and thanks them for their service and lets them know that it's because of them and their bravery that he is still king. Now, what about the other side? It says all Israel had fled, every man to his own house. So everybody that was on the other side of this fight, the ones that survived, they went back. They went back across the Jordan, back to their homes. And now the people at Jerusalem, the ones that are kind of taking care of leadership, they realize that the horse they backed is dead. Absalom is not the king that will be coming back from this fight. David will be. And so they have got to make their minds up to support David as king. Verse number 9, all the people were arguing throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, the king delivered us from the hand of our enemies and saved us from the hand of the Philistines, and now he's fled out of the land from Absalom. But Absalom, whom we anointed over us, is dead in battle. Now, therefore, why do you say nothing about bringing the king back? So the cultural shift is back to David. It had gone to Absalom, but Absalom is gone, so it's now back to David. And they need David back now. And so when we come back tomorrow, we will talk about the process of David returning from his exile back to Jerusalem.